Set your course for the Hoth system. General Veers, prepare your men.
All troops will debark for ground assault. Prepare to target the main generator.
Echo Station 3TA.
On an Imperial Walker.
Attack pattern Delta. Go now. Watch that clock fire, boys. Right now, I feel like I could take on the whole Empire myself.
Target, maximum firepower.
Imperial troops have entered the bay.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Echo Base. This is episode number 131, recorded on February 6, 2018. We have an exciting show for you guys tonight. I am joined by my two co-hosts, Eric and Tim. Eric, how are you tonight?
You know, I don't even really want to answer that question.
Right well, now. We will unearth that answer as we go through most of your rants this evening, because I know you got a few of them lined up.
I have some non-rant stuff.
Really?
Yeah, we share the closing credits. We alternate back and forth between us at the end.
I was just about to say, I find that answer vague and unconvincing, but no, I will not. And Tim, how are you tonight?
It's not that I don't want to answer it. I'm not sure how to answer it. No, I'm doing well. I'm doing well. I'm happy to be here. We are mostly over into Discord, and that was pretty painless. Yes. We just kind of ripped the Band-Aid off. Yep. And
it's a nice switch.
A lot of folks joined us over there. My wife is now in the group. Tonight.
Excellent.
She said, "Darn it, this is it. I'm gonna start contributing to the thing that caused me to not see you."
She called it contributing instead of babysitting, because she worded it differently when she was talking to us.
Yeah.
Hall monitor.
So she's
people
over
might not know
story.
What you're talking about. We talk a lot about our Slack community, and we decided to migrate from Slack over to Discord because we feel like Discord has a larger selection of features that we're going to be able to utilize, whereas Slack has been going more toward the corporate user. And so one of the good things about this, I know at the end of the show, we normally plug Patreon and everything, and the donors who donate at least $1 a month, which is the lowest tier, have gotten access to Slack. Well, now they will get access to all of the various subscriber channels in Discord, but even people who don't donate can now get into Discord. We have what we're calling a main lobby general chat room. So yeah, even if you don't donate,
there's a guy at a desk that asks for your ID. Well, won't you go past there?
There is.
You know, so you're locked right in there.
There is. It's a very nice droid, though. It's a protocol droid, so it's kind of brainless. But, you know, it's pretty good. But, yeah, even if you don't donate now, you can get into Discord. If you go to randomcheddar.com/Discord, you can at least hang out with us in the general chat room there, and there's also an announcements channel. So, you know, if you've been on the fence about whether or not to hang out with us, try it out. If you like it, you can donate and get access to all of it. And if you don't want to do that, you can still hang out and chat in general chat with us. So good
It'll
stuff. The migration's gone
Come
well.
Come join us.
Yes.
Well, since we do have as Tim put it, 6 pages of show notes, we're going to get right into this.
You
can't deny it's 6 pages.
It is. It's not full. It doesn't go all the way to the end of, well, it goes almost all the way
almost.
To the end of page 6.
Almost. It's 2/3 of the last page. So it's 5 2/3 pages.
I was being thorough. Listen, here's my opinion. I think we need to, after, between the fan community after The Last Jedi, and then within literally minutes of today's announcement in the news, I think we need to stop covering Star Wars on the network. I think we need to move to something that's a little more free of drama and hatred than that. And I think we need to cover politics.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, yeah. It's far less divisive than Star Wars.
Yeah.
Yes. Just to get a reduction in the level of drama and hatred. I think that might be good.
Yep.
And I'm sure I'll say it several more times throughout the episode. I just don't understand the level of hatred the level of controversy people want to stir up immediately.
No, there's hatred out there too.
Yeah,
well, there is.
But, yeah, there's hatred.
You know, listen, I used to love, I mean, I love the Star Wars fan community, and I still do, because a lot of the hatred and stuff that we're seeing, and I don't mean just hatred of what is happening news-wise. I mean, like, the vitriol of one person toward another person on Twitter within the Star Wars fan community.
Right.
I still, I recognize intellectually that this is just a sampling of Star Wars fandom. It's just a fraction of it. But it used to be back in the day that the Star Wars fan community was the most unified fan community I had ever seen.
Yeah.
It didn't matter what aspect of Star Wars you'd enjoy. It didn't matter where you were from, what country, what race you were, whether you were male or female. And none of this stuff mattered. It was just this all-inclusive community. And it is now gone to fully to the other end of the spectrum. It is, from what I'm seeing, the most divisive fan community out there. And it's depressing. Like, it's actually depressing on a certain level.
It is really troublesome. I mean, we see, you know, I think some really unnecessary dialogue, and it's great for people to express themselves. And I think, you know,
yeah, I'm not trying to shut anybody up.
It's the blessing and the curse of social media that people are able to freely express themselves, but they're also able to do so without thinking before their fingers start doing the talking for them. Right. And I'm just as much, you know, have fallen a victim of myself in those regards as anyone else has. Excuse me. But, you know, it really seems to stir the pot a lot. And a lot of it stems from, particularly in this fandom, it stems from a love for the fandom. It stems from a passion. But then you just have a lot of people who really, I think, jump the gun. And kind of as we were just talking about some of our bonus content here, some of it stems from a certain group of people who, at least from all appearances, are looking for a reason to be offended. And I'm not even sure if that offense is real. They want something to be reactionary to. Mm-hmm. It's some kind of emotional security blanket for them that they get to have this release and they get to be heard and they get to rattle the cage a little bit. And I mean, there are certainly plenty of things out there to actually legitimately be offended over. But it just seems there's some things that are just like, wow, really? You chose that to be offended over, and that has nothing to do with you or anything else in reality, because Star Wars is fake.
It's like they're digging so deep just to find something to bring up to be controversial.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, it used to be the love of Star Wars and in the, you know, the feeling this gave us as kids. And, you know, I want to get back to that point. I want to get back to the point where, hey, it's about fun. Yeah. I mean, the galaxy far, far away is, you know, imagination gone wild, and it should be fun for us. And sometimes it feels like it's not.
Yeah. I think part of that is it's not the core of the problem. It's not the cause of the problem, but it is the core from which we have grown into creating a problem for ourselves. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of the hyper defensiveness about Star Wars comes from the sense of ownership people have as a result of their passion.
Sure.
And so I think they take such ownership of it on such a personal level that then it becomes, and Star Wars has changed, mm-hmm. and it's going to continue to change. That's the thing. And sure. Anytime it changes, it redefines what Star Wars is to some extent, even if only to a small extent. But people don't want it redefined. They don't want it to change. They already know what Star Wars is to them. That is a sense of identity and a sense of ownership that they have about that, because that ownership, especially for our generation, mm-hmm. that has developed so much of, I mean, if it weren't for Star Wars, not just as a kid, but coming up through the 80s and even into the 90s, there was other sci-fi, right. but a lot of it was it was made by people who were inspired by Star Wars. And then a lot of it wasn't as good as Star Wars.
Yeah.
Where the world building wasn't as good. Now it's a little bit different. We have, I think, a better sense of these more epic world building sagas and stuff. So, you know, my son is going to grow up in a world of fictional entertainment that's very different from what I grew up in. But for our generation, there's still that ownership.
Sure.
So it hurts more. And I think that's why people have been so hyper defensive at kind of a root level. Now, the individual topics that have come up, the topics are different things.
Well, and yeah. I think that there's a, you know, there's a lot of folks who say, oh, well, you know, this isn't my Star Wars. And they have that ownership of the things that they have related to or maybe grown up with. For us, it started with the original trilogy. For other folks, it was the prequels. For a lot of fans out there, it was the Clone Wars. And that's why we saw such a big outcry for, you know, when people wanted the Save the Clone Wars movement and all that kind of stuff. I think a lot of people default to the stuff that they feel most comfortable with and the things that it's nostalgic for them. It's the things that they relate to the most. And like you said, Eric, Star Wars is changing and it's going to change. And of course, it's really interesting that in The Last Jedi, we heard several times this mantra of, you know, let go of the past. The past is dead. And, yeah. You know, we have to, I won't say to forget the past because we learn a lot from the past. And particularly if we look at this in terms of the fandom, there's a lot to enjoy. Obviously, there's an entire catalog of things, be they canonical or otherwise. And those things are still there. They still exist and they're still being mined. You know, we see that we're going to talk about the Solo TV spot and the teaser here. And pretty evidently, they're mining stuff from EU books. And yeah. And that's fantastic. So a lot of that stuff is being done. But I think a lot of folks get angsty. And we've seen this through all of humanity. When something is different, people tend to react oftentimes, at least initially, negatively toward it. You know, they don't like it.
And definitely they react emotionally.
Yeah.
Right. It's
change is
difficult.
Change
is difficult. it's a tough thing to deal with. But we have a lot of stuff to go over tonight, so yeah. I'm going to kind of cut you guys short on that discussion and move right into our news.
There's news?
Now, I'm probably going to... You know, we've had no real big news for a while, and now we get the trailer drop, and then today the bombshell drops that ignited Twitter today. But also, I mean, I ignited me in a good way. I thought this was a great news item to drop in here. So it was announced today, a couple of different sources. I think the first one to break it was the Star Wars show, I think, right? Wasn't it?
I'm not sure. I didn't get it from them.
I got it from StarWars.com.
I didn't get it originally from them, but that's what I thought it was from. So, but anyways, now I'm going to butcher the guy's first name. David Benioff, is that?
Yeah,
Benioff. The last name? Okay. Mm-hmm. And D.B. Weiss. These are two guys that were, you know, running Game of Thrones, are getting to do a Star Wars series.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is amazing news, but some people didn't, clearly. I mean, personally, for me, I think something like this being announced and getting these guys to do a series of films, and we don't know what that means yet, but a series of films, to me is we're going in a new direction. We're not going back to the saga of what we had before. They're bringing new things to the, to the fandom in new ideas, which I think we sorely need.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's as, you know, similar to what we heard with the announcement several weeks ago about Rian Johnson getting his kind of his own trilogy, Thrawn, of course. but these are not the same thing. So what these guys are doing is they very specifically said this is not the Rian Johnson trilogy. This is its own thing. They're kind of vague in terms of what this actually means. It's not necessarily a trilogy. They referred to it as a series of films. So maybe it is a trilogy, maybe it's not. We don't actually know. And, you know, looking at it from the perspective of, hey, we're going to get more Star Wars content. And we're going to get Star Wars content that is written by a couple of guys who put together something that has been culturally significant, being Game of Thrones. I mean, there is no doubt that Game of Thrones has become a culturally significant piece or a slice of pop culture. And
highly successful.
Yeah, highly successful.
Right.
Just really, and just like anything, it has its ups and its downs. Overall, really great writing. And obviously it was based on previously existing stories, but you can't, as we've mentioned gazillion times before, you can't just take a book and say, here's a movie script. It doesn't work like that. So, exactly. You know, these guys had to do the screen adaptations from the book. It's from the books themselves. So that's great. And we've had, unfortunately, some naysayers saying, now I think we're going to get oversaturation. This is too much Star Wars. We've also had some folks saying, hey, these two guys, first of all, it's two white guys. And, you know, there's been an awful lot of noise, and I think rightfully so, about the lack of female and minority representation in the leadership of Star Wars films in particular. And, sure. You know, we see a little bit of irony when we have Kathleen Kennedy, who is at the helm of Lucasfilm, yet, you know, we are seeing a lot of white guys who are being put into these and positions.
Isn't half the story group made up of women?
It is.
A good portion, yeah.
A good portion of it is.
About half.
And that's great. That's a good step in the right direction, but that's
before
not.
Before we get into that, though, I want to know what you guys think. Okay, so the controversy aside, from a creative content point of view, I want to know what you guys think about that. You guys both watch Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so you're familiar with the content.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to point out real quick, and I should have pulled this up before we started recording. In our, I think it was in our general Star Wars channel, Josh had talked about some of the other stuff that one of the two of them had done before and pointed out some things I hadn't really thought about. But I'll come back to that in a minute. I want to know, what do you guys think about the news when it comes to the content? How do you think this is going to work out content-wise?
Well, I mean, I think I said up front originally that, you know, I'm excited that these guys are going to bring something new and different to the table. Now, I don't think we're going to get Game of Thrones in space. You know, no, they're going to put their own spin on the Star Wars universe, which I think is great because we need a new voice and I think a new direction.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're going to see some really great creativity. They mentioned in the release here that these guys have a particular interest in a certain point of time within Star Wars. And Eric, in his show notes here, and I don't want to, if you want to say it, Eric, or I can.
Which part?
Just in terms of the points of time here that are kind of significant.
No, you can go ahead.
Okay. So it laid out four particular points in time that we kind of have in Star Wars. We have the prequel era. We have the Empire Rebellion kind of original trilogy era. We have the New Republic, Resistance First Order, so the sequel trilogy era. And then we also have the Old Republic. And the Old Republic obviously is the one that's kind of the bright, shiny beacon that has a pretty vocal and very interested fandom, which hasn't been addressed by anything in this reboot of the canon.
And untapped potential.
Yeah.
That when it has been tapped in other medium has been very successful.
Absolutely.
Right.
And when you think about it, there's actually, interestingly enough, and some people are going to say, Tim, you're high on something because this doesn't equate. When you look at the general feel in concepts of Game of Thrones, I think that can translate really well toward Old Republic. Because
I don't think people are going to accuse you of being high on that thought. I think a lot of people feel that way. I think that is a very logical conclusion to come to.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, you're not necessarily looking at, you know, dragons and seafaring ships, but you're looking at something, you know, we're going back in time from kind of, you know, a known era. And so we're going to see some changes in technology. We're going to see some really different concepts. But I see so much similarity between what they've done in Game of Thrones and what could be done in the Old Republic. And that excites me a lot. I think there's a lot of really good potential there. for this. So yeah, I mean the storytelling is endless. There is a lot of speculation that these quote films may actually end up on as basically streamed films, not big screen films, but you know, small screen films that we will see on the Disney streaming platform. So they could be doing something like a series like Game of Thrones, you know, in that particular format.
Well, so something that came out of that investors call, investor conference call that this all originated from Bob Iger. The impression that people are getting based on the wording is that they were offered some TV series for Star Wars and they turned it down. So when they say a series of films, and then again, the exact words of focused on a point in time in the Star Wars mythology, all signs point to Old Republic.
Sure.
And the movies don't necessarily have to be all sequels to one another. It's more of an era in which we could see standalone movies. They might take them to their streaming service, but if they do, it sounds like it would be taken to their streaming service as films, much like what Netflix just did with the Cloverfield 3 movie, the Cloverfield Paradox, as a way to kind of bolster that streaming service. I don't think that it, based on what I'm reading here, that they're going to do a TV series out of it. It is really important. And this is part of a larger point that I think it's going to come up later as we're discussing the controversy stuff. It is important to point out that Bob Iger also clarified there are, quote, a few Star Wars television series in development, not merely one.
When I had read that, it made me smile.
Yeah, that is so exciting.
Big,
I mean,
I'm huge ear to ear.
Yeah, I'm ready to cut a check now. I mean, is Disney doing like a Kickstarter or something for this thing? I mean, I know they're kind of cash strapped, so I'm happy to contribute to the Kickstarter, and you know, maybe they'll give me like a day's worth of free service when it comes out or something.
Well, no, the top tier perk for it is if you contribute more than $5,000, then after you click submit, it gives you a confirmation notice.
Ooh.
That your donation went through. Yeah.
Is it suitable for framing if I print it myself?
If you've got the frame for it.
Depends on the paper you use, yeah.
I don't think they're worried about kickstarting it.
But. Yeah, no. No, there are like so many things, so many possibilities with this. And obviously these guys, they know how to write episodic arcs, which is another great thing. I mean, I would say that we wouldn't see a lot of the disconnects that we see in the sequel trilogy.
I'm going to throw a wrench in your plans here, though, Tim.
Okay.
What I was trying to look up earlier, this is from Josh in the Slack channel, and I should have, this is just before we started recording. I didn't really get a chance to go into IMDb and research what they've done in the past because I had to type up all these show notes that I got a little distracted with.
Six pages,
but Josh
people.
Pointed out,
carried away
we're
with
still them. On the first page.
Hush. He said, I will say that Dave Benioff is not a strong writer. Look at Troy. In parentheses, he said, though I enjoy the film a lot and have a degree in classical studies and can tell you how many ways the film is wrong. He says, Look at X-Men 3. Not exactly one of the more well-loved X-Men movies. Look at Brothers. Brothers was, it was okay. I mean, it wasn't a great movie, but I don't know there's anything wrong with it per se. But I see what Josh is saying.
But these are all single movies. And even though X-Men 3 is part
that's
of
what we're
a
talking about.
Series.
But that's what we're talking about.
He didn't have anything to do with the other films. In this situation, he and Weiss are directly involved in multiple films, multiple episodes of whatever it is that they're doing. So it's those grander story arcs, I think. And obviously, these two balance each other very well. You know, maybe he has a strength in one thing and Weiss has a strength in something else. And coming together, they make a good team. And, you know, we've seen evidence in that of that from Game of Thrones. Now, again, they were supported by fantastic underlying stories, which they have done adaptations for, but still, it's not a facsimile. It's not a one-to-one. They still had to build a lot of this.
Well, so that begs another question too. They're showrunners for Game of Thrones. I'm curious as to, now they obviously had a great amount of creative control over the series. I don't know how many scripts specifically they wrote, how many episodes they directed, if any, but they were without question the showrunners who steered the ship. Mm-hmm. With these new movies for Star Wars, nothing's been announced as to whether they are, you know, are they directing? Are they writing? Are they acting as executive producers who are kind of in control of the content for this sub-series? Let's say for the sake of example that it is Old Republic. Mm-hmm. And let's say they want to do something that focuses on the blockade of the Hydean Way, mm-hmm. or the events from Knights of the Old Republic, or some of the Tales of the Old Republic comic book series. So these are all different independent stories that take place in that same era, that same world. So there's world building going on. It could be that they are the overall controllers of the content without actually writing the actual screenplay. I really doubt they would be doing that, and without doing any directing. And for the people who were upset that there's not more diversity in that, we could actually see a woman directing a movie in this subset of movies. We don't know the whole story yet of exactly what their role is, other than that they are, quote, creating a series, end quote.
Well, I mean, the article on StarWars.com says that they will write and produce a new series of films.
And okay. Now, keep in mind, writing in Hollywood, writing a lot of times means coming up with a treatment. And then sometimes a draft script, and that script gets redone so many freaking times.
Yeah. Right, right.
So, and again, director wasn't listed in there anywhere.
No.
What I think that this provides, and I'm not trying to excuse or you know, shove under the carpet the fact that, you know, bringing in two more white guys does not help any of diversity in the film leadership that we have at Disney and Lucasfilm. But what this announcement does provide is opportunity. Mm-hmm. Because, well, prior to this announcement, this series never existed. So we bring in two people who are well known for developing a good series. They're going to do that. And hopefully that's then going to open the door for some great directors and other production and film management staff who hopefully do give us some broader representation. So I'm optimistic about the opportunity that it provides us, because I just cannot think that Disney and Lucasfilm has been deaf to the fact that they don't have that diverse representation. And that's something that it's important to the fans. It is important to, it's simply important to good filmmaking and good production. You need to have that good representation in order to kind of meet the needs of your audiences, because they want to feel represented. And while there's some great male writers out there who have written some fantastic female parts, well, you know what? There's only so far that can go. And so let's bring some female writers in there. Let's bring some female directors in there. Let's have people from different and diverse backgrounds doing some of this. And we're seeing a lot of success in this. I mean, you know, Wonder Woman went off fantastically. We're seeing...
That's the thing. I see so many people complaining about, you know, why can't we bring a woman director in and get Patty Jenkins in here? This is what might get Patty Jenkins in here. Yeah. She might direct one of these films.
Exactly. This is creating the opportunity. This is what is hopefully opening the door. And you know what? Yes, they could have done this with somebody other than two white guys. They absolutely could have. But there are people out there who are qualified for it. But these are the two that they chose for whatever reason. And
right. But Tim, I mean, look who chose them. Kathleen Kennedy.
Yeah.
I mean, she's ultimately the person in charge of Lucasfilm, and she has a lot to say about who they're hiring and who they're putting in place. Yeah. If she wanted to push an agenda of something different, she would do that. Yeah. I mean, she's hiring the people she feels are the best people for the role they're going to play, not a role as in an actor role, but, you know, the role within the organization they're going to play, whether they're white, mm-hmm. Hispanic, female, what, you know, whatever. She's putting the best team together she can.
And despite the change.org petitions, I think she's doing a good job. You know, she has a good track record, and there's right. the pool is developing that's out there.
Right. And the tide's changing it, you know, it's slowly and probably far too slowly, but things are changing and moving in the right direction, I think, to be more equal.
Yeah.
It's just, it's not going to happen overnight. And if you force it to happen in a way that's not natural, you're going to end up with the wrong people in the wrong places.
Yeah. And you will end up with bad films. You will end up with resentful people. You will end up with a lot of things. And granted, you can't make everyone happy all the time. That's something I learned a long time ago. But you can try to make most of the people happy most of the time. And I think, you know, if folks put the pitchforks and torches away and take a breath and see how this evolves, I think that people will be happy. I have confidence. Disney is progressive. Lucasfilm is progressive. Let them do what they do. They will get there. I'm quite positive they're hearing people.
So if I promise to make this fast, can I try to whip through this section?
Yes,
please do.
As long as you do it fast,
I will do my best.
I'm just kidding.
To do it fast. And to Tim, to what you just said, it frustrates me that, again, the divisiveness in the Star Wars fan community right now seems to far surpass divisiveness in any other community at the moment. And yet, Star Wars arguably has been more inclusive and diverse with their films, especially the recent films, than any other franchise I've seen recently. So even then, the Marvel stuff, arguably, which is getting a lot of praise for its diversity.
Yeah,
so,
especially now with Black Panther. I mean, it's
frustrating.
Black Panther's, and hell, you look at Rotten Tomatoes, I think it might still be at 100%.
Yeah, no. And I, too, praise their diversity. I'm just saying Star Wars has it too, if not more. So there are still things to be worked on, but are we not moving in the right direction finally after decades and decades of not?
Yeah.
Anyway, so some things from Twitter today, and I will try to make this quick, and I'm not going to give anybody's names because I don't feel like I want to promote their feeds. But so the first one, Benioff and Weiss are the same guys who thought to have a show about an alternative history where slavery still exists. How can we count on them to write our women of color in this galaxy? Now they're referring to Confederate, which was a show that was going to have aired on HBO.
That's right. Yeah.
Now, first of all, I'm not into alternative history as a genre because a lot of it's period stuff or based on period stuff, and it's just not my thing. I'm not a history buff. But the whole point of alternative history stories is to show what the world would have been like if something horrible were still happening. Nobody's questioning that slavery was horrible, or at least they shouldn't be questioning that. But that's what alternative history stories do. That's why a lot of them are based on Nazis having won World War II and what would happen if they took over pretty much the whole planet.
Right.
That's the point. Okay. Number two, Game of Thrones has an entire A-plot story arc, which is about a woman freeing slaves and having them rise up against their oppressors and becoming powerful.
True. Very true.
So there's your answer to your own question. Those are the guys who did exactly that.
Yeah.
Yep.
And there have been a lot of points.
And when Daenerys freed them, she gave them the choice to do what they wanted to do. And most of them said, we're staying with you.
It's not
you
like she just
us.
Re-slaved them
lives.
Again under, you know, better speeches or something. Yeah. There have been a ton of posts about the violence toward women in Game of Thrones, and I can understand that. and how that means he shouldn't, these two shouldn't do Star Wars. Well, first of all, they didn't write the source material for this. Second, I'm sure HBO as a network had influence on some of the stuff that's happened in the show as far as trying to amp it up a little bit for ratings. Cause I mean, HBO has benefited just a little bit from Game of Thrones. But there's also been violence against men on the show. And I don't just mean in battles and stuff. I mean, on a personal level, it doesn't seem to me like they've been singling out women for violent scenes. I mean, the whole storyline with Reek and all that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that they're going to do that with this material.
Right.
Either.
Right.
Right.
I mean, if it doesn't fit the story, why would you do it? You know,
The stuff and they were doing was very appropriate to the story. And I think it was pretty well balanced. They were not singling out women in any of this. And there were some really horrible. I mean, there was, you know, rape scenes and all sorts of stuff and you know, really bad things.
Yeah. But, and I'm not condoning that.
Yeah. But it added context to the film just as much as the violence against men did. And
I mean, it was part of the world building. Yeah.
And also, we're not trying to equate rape to anything that was done to men. That's not the point we're trying to make here. Right. The point is, it doesn't seem that there was any intent to single out women to be victimized as opposed to men.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing, too, at least for the last season, if not longer now, every strong character in a position of leadership or who's displaying competent power in this show, with the exception of one, Jon Snow, every other strong character in this show is a female.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Like I'm excited about that. Now, in all fairness, in our Slack community, again, it happened to be from Josh. He pointed out some counterpoints to that. And there's a whole discussion there. If you're a member of our Slack, or not our Slack community, I have to stop saying that now, our Discord community.
Right.
If you're a member of that, I would highly recommend you check out that discussion. There's some good counterpoints there as well. But for me personally, I'm thrilled that now we're seeing like there's one guy and like eight women who control basically all of Westeros right now. And it's awesome.
And you have characters that go through arcs who, you know, be they male or female, they may start off in power and end up in poverty. They may start off in poverty and end up in power. And, you know, they may have a sine curve that goes through that whole thing as they go through these arcs. And, and you know, we see that we see a lot of potential for that in Star Wars. We've seen some of that represented. Yes, I'd like to see more. I don't think that what they've done with it in Game of Thrones was anything bad.
Honestly, I think that the story arcs that people have progressed through in Game of Thrones are far superior to the ones we've seen in Star Wars, whether it be the sequels or the prequels. And to be fair, that's not an equal analogy because we're talking a TV series versus movies.
Sure, sure.
And I get that. But still, these guys, at least they do understand, you don't just have a powerful character be powerful. You show how they built the, and whether it be financial power, political power, or just personal spiritual power.
Right.
You show how they started out without that and then acquired it. And then you show the hubris of people who started out with power and lost it. You have to show change to build characters. And these guys, or whoever their writers are, that's something they grasp. So, again, I don't really understand this point. I understand the concepts behind the point.
Sure.
I just don't understand how it's entirely relevant to this particular situation. So here's another one. Under Benioff and Weiss, only 4 Game of Thrones episodes were written by women. Only one director was a woman. So sorry, I'm not enthusiastic about this at all. Okay, now, there you go. That is a great point.
Yeah. Now context.
And that's disappointing. However, Star Wars happens to have none of the movies written by women. It happens to have none of the movies directed by women, which would seem to put Game of Thrones a little bit ahead. And that's, you know, that's something I would like to see change too. Mm-hmm. But I guess my point is, like, you're a Star Wars fan, of which we have no women involvement in writing or directing, and you're complaining about Game of Thrones, in which we have an insufficient amount, granted, but we have some.
Yeah, and so basically that means Game of Thrones has accomplished more than Star Wars has in that regard.
In that regard, yes. And again, we don't know. We pointed out earlier, and I can't emphasize this enough. We don't know who's actually going to be directing these movies.
Right.
Yep.
So finally, as far as stuff from Twitter. Hey, remember how Lucasfilm hired three white guys who were, quote, exciting storytellers before Star Wars and ended up firing them because they utterly floundered in universe very publicly and with all the ensuing bad publicity? You'd think they'd want to try a different track. Okay, I can, of all the points so far, like, I understand the source of these points. I get the logic that is behind the structure of all the other points, even if I disagree with the points in these circumstances. But this one blows my mind.
No, but I mean, basically what this one is saying is that white guys will fail. And that,
well, this is saying that the problem is that they were white guys.
Yeah, and that is just as racist and sexist as any remark that anyone would make against women or persons of color or any other diversity. And that's something that really ticks me off.
Right. Here's why they were fired. One, Josh Trank was fired because he was notoriously difficult to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And he was causing problems at his prior job. And there was some discussions behind the scenes, apparently, between the people he worked with at Fox and Kathleen Kennedy at Lucasfilm and et cetera, et cetera. And I guess he got a little bit of an attitude with Lucasfilm, and Kathleen Kennedy said, no, we're done, dude. We're not going to do this. So it was because, and I'm paraphrasing, he was a jerk.
Yeah.
The other two, now keep in mind, yes, three people, but two of them are kind of grouped together because it was two guys directing a film together.
Lesson learned, though.
Right.
It doesn't matter if you're a man, a woman, any other gender, or black or white, or have any other ethnic background. Don't be a jerk.
Don't be a jerk.
That's what that comes down to. It had nothing to
have
do,
respect.
At least as far as I know, with him being a white guy. He was a jerk.
So we're talking about three people, as this person points out, but really, it's two films for which directors were fired because the other two were brothers who were together. They're kind of a package deal.
Yeah.
They were fired because they believed, for whatever reason, whether it be miscommunication or whatever, I have nothing against these two guys, but they were fired because they felt they had the creative control to set a comedic tone when they didn't actually have that creative control. Okay. So they fired the directors from two movies. The directors from the other three movies arguably did a great job. One, so much so that before the movie was even released, Kathleen Kennedy said, hey, we got to work with you again.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we give you a trilogy? We don't even know what it's going to be about. Just you take it and run with it.
Mm-hmm.
And they happen to be white men. And again, I support the fact that we need women behind the cameras and writing scripts.
Yeah.
We need that. It's not just a want. It's something we need to have.
Yeah.
But the problem is not that these guys were men. I'll get to what the real problem going on is in a minute. How is this a race thing, too? White men.
Mm.
They weren't fired because they were white. They were, and there's no reason to believe they were hired initially because they were white. The two of them were hired because of the success they had on the Lego Movie, which was a massive success.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that didn't translate to the task that they were given.
Right. Josh Trank was hired because of the successes he had. Lucasfilm was trying to get relatively new directors who hadn't done much yet, but who had been successful with what they had done so far, much like Rian Johnson. He did really well with Brick. He did really well with Looper.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they were looking for in directors. So that's maybe what they're now wanting to, quote, try a different track with. Not skin color. Not that we don't need people of all ethnic diversities and such. But again, they weren't hired for that reason. They weren't fired for that reason either. So here's, when it all comes down to it, here's my big problem with this. First of all, this is not the only project Lucasfilm is working on, okay? So just because these guys got hired for this, that doesn't have anything to do with the hundreds of hours of content we're going to get for now multiple TV series. This does not have anything to do with who's going to be directing or writing the scripts for Rian Johnson's trilogy. And this has nothing to do with, keep in mind, Rian Johnson's trilogy takes place somewhere else. It's kind of a side project trilogy. you've still got whatever's going to continue happening with whatever the main saga ends up being and with whatever the anthology movies are. There are more projects than just this. This does not mean that women are not going to get in. The problem, not just here, but in Hollywood, it's not that we're hiring white men. Okay. The problem is that the industry isn't giving women and other minorities the opportunities they need. People keep saying, well, it should be a merit-based system. If you do good work, you should get hired for more stuff. You're right. The problem is the women aren't being given an opportunity to demonstrate that they do good work. And other minority directors aren't being given opportunities to demonstrate that they do good work. So they don't have the opportunities to build a portfolio to bring to the table. That's why they're not getting considered for things like this, not because of their sex or their orientation or their race, but because of their work history, because they haven't been allowed to get enough of a work history. The work, and here's the problem where it becomes circular, the lack of the work history is often, not always, but it is often because of the sex or the orientation or the race. They're not being given the opportunities they need. That's the problem. Not that these guys were hired and they're white, but because there aren't enough opportunities for other people to be able to come to the table with a seasoned resume.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see the point of, you know, hey, you hire two white guys. And like you said, Eric, it's the age old problem that we've all gone through when you're first getting your job. It's, well, you can't get a job without experience and you can't get the experience without the job.
Right.
They need to do a better job of bringing people in early in their careers to do things and get that experience, you know, whether it's people of color, females, whoever, and they're not given those opportunities as frequently as white men are. That's the problem we need to get out. I'm not saying it's be solved at a high level of bringing somebody in to do Star Wars, but it's gotta be a built on thing. It can't just be, you know, 0 to 100. It's got to slowly come up to the point where we're bringing people in and giving them the opportunities and making sure they get that foot in the door to get the experience to do the high profile movies.
Right. And of course the question is, okay, well, aren't you kind of being circular with your logic, then? You're saying they're not being given the opportunity, so give them the opportunities and don't give it to these guys. But right now, Kathleen Kennedy and her teams have had to bring Star Wars back after George Lucas sold it and make it into something successful. So they had to make sure that they were going to make successes. And again, it sucks that, I mean, it's really tragic that you have to go with established resumes for some of this stuff. But Star Wars is a big franchise. They had to nail the success before they can then start taking risks.
Mm-hmm.
We're now at a point, I think, where Star Wars can start taking risks again. I feel like so far what we've had been successes, though a lot of groups in the fan community don't. But
well, they've been financial successes.
Yeah, they're certainly financial successes. So now they are starting to build that flexibility to be able to come in and bring in unproven yet skilled filmmakers.
Right.
And allow those filmmakers to demonstrate their skill and to demonstrate that they're powerhouses. And so I'm looking forward to this. Tim, at the very beginning of all this, you said that this could be an opportunity to bring in some women to direct and write. And that's what I'm looking forward through all this. I think let's isolate what the problem actually is and let's fix that.
Yeah.
Let's drop the hatred.
Mm-hmm.
Let's drop the vilification of men.
Right. Because
the problem
is none of that
the
gets
people
us
who
anywhere.
Are doing the hiring, not the people who are getting hired. What's that?
I said, none of that gets us anywhere. When people start, you know, casting the hatred that doesn't. I mean, you can express your displeasure with things. You can express the fact that you don't like things, that you want change, and you can still be positive about it instead of, you know, making other people feel bad about themselves. I mean, mm-hmm. just for as much as a black woman can't change the fact that she's black or female, hey, I can't change the fact that I'm a white guy. So, you know, let's not cast disparaging things against anyone and work together to make the change that we want to have. Let's support everyone. Let's try to make sure we get that representation. Let's support that representation. Mm-hmm. Let's stop disparaging people. It's just not positive.
I almost feel that the more divided the community is and the more at odds we are with each other about things like who's directing this or who's being hired for doing this job, you know, the more you can hurt a film and the more, well, the more critical the fans are of films for those kinds of reasons, the less chances I think that the studio wants to take. You know, if there's a possibility of it being looked on negative because of who we're hiring for a particular role, maybe we don't want to branch out and try somebody new. We're going to go with more established people. And that's not what we need. We need to bring in new talent.
Yeah. Well, and let's just remember that, you know, largely it was this kind of negativity in the fandom, which was at least a significant contributing factor to George Lucas saying, peace out. I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm not dealing with it anymore. I made some films which I thought were pretty awesome, and all I'm getting is, you know, a lot of people bashing them, and that sucks. So I'm out.
I will say this. I'm at least grateful that if we are going to have some sort of an issue about the state of fandom or something, that it's at least about a real world issue and not about the nonsense that happened about the prequel bashing and stuff like that. I mean, this is an actual problem in the real world of the industry. I mean, this is a business. We talked about this prior to recording tonight. This is a business. People have jobs. Mm-hmm. This is their livelihood. This does matter.
Yeah.
Don't misunderstand what we're saying. It absolutely matters. I just want to fix what the actual problem is, and let's work together. Let's all get on board and unify. And the other thing is, there are probably some people who are listening to this and saying, okay, so we got three old white guys talking about this issue. There just happens to be, yes, you're old now, Tim. Happy birthday, by the way. Yeah, Lou, this is no surprise to you. But I know, right? I went there. But this happens to be the one show on the network at the moment that doesn't have any female hosts on the show. And it's ironic that this happens to be the show on which this topic came up. I will commit to bringing on at least two of the three between Andrea, Lizzie, and Shannon. And barring getting two of those three, I'll bring Carrie on as a backup on getting sidetracked now that we've discussed it on our main Star Wars show. And we'll have a discussion about the industry in general from this perspective on that show. And I will.
Oh, I think that'd be great. Yeah.
Yeah. I will do my best to sit back and shut up. I know that's hard sometimes, but
I've never seen you do that.
I try. I've done it a few times.
It's not a bad thing. No, it's okay.
Anyway, I'm going to try to sit back and let them kind of take the discussion. I think this is important, and I want to make sure that if we're going to present a perspective on it, I mean, who's better perspective to get than women who are Star Wars fans who are on our network
and we're looking for. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So did we lose Tim? I see in the video here, Tim walked away. I don't know whether to proceed or not.
We did. He got fed up. He's totally gone. He said, you know what? I'm out of here.
I knew it was just a matter of time. I knew I would find the right button to push.
And if he's not back in a while, we're going to send somebody out to find him because it gets cold out there and he didn't have a ton of time with him, I don't think so.
Yeah, that's true.
If he gets cold, he's out of luck.
And ironically, now we're at the happy part of
I know. So the show. Tim, you missed it. We're going to talk about the trailers now, which, I mean, okay.
I'm sure we can find a controversy in here, too, aside from the whole wearing fur thing. There's got to be some kind of controversy here.
Now, you know, I think we've all been on record saying that we don't feel we needed this movie coming out, right? I mean, this is not the movie we've been looking for.
Yeah.
It's not something that I really need to dig into the backstory. I feel, you know, the legend stuff for me was always enough to have in my mind, okay, that's how it was. You know, I don't need a whole movie to confirm what happened. That being said, we're getting it. So, you know, I'm going to go see it. I mean, there's no way you're not going to get me, you know, there opening night because I definitely want to see the movie.
Right.
And I was pretty happy with what we saw so far, both the TV spot in the Super Bowl and the teaser released the next day. The imagery looks like Star Wars. I mean, it looks really, really good. I'm excited for this. I'm really, really, really excited for seeing it on the screen. story aside, I mean, usually I want a good story. So I'm like, okay, I know kind of what we're going to get, you know, it looks like a mix of, you know, legend / EU and new stuff, which I think is good. I mean, pulling in stuff that we've all read about in the stories is awesome because it makes us feel like, yeah, it's not wasted. You know, I'm still getting that, you know?
Oh yeah.
But, I'm excited that there's going to be new stuff brought in, and it looks like there'll be some new scenes, some new stuff that we didn't see in the books that I'm excited about.
I'm really hopeful for if we're just going to do our in a nutshell reactions here. First, I agree with you. I still don't know that I want this movie. It looks gorgeous. I'm a little worried about the story, but I've said it before. I'll say it again. I don't watch Star Wars movies for the story. I'm a little concerned about not needing it and how it's going to affect this, the character of Han Solo. In fact, the only thing I was not impressed about with this TV spot it's officially a teaser. It's not a full trailer. Mm-hmm. Is Ehrenreich? Am I saying it correctly? I think so.
I think it's Ehrenreich. Yeah,
Alden Ehrenreich. Now I can't speak. Alden Ehrenreich. Want to make sure I get his name correct. I'm not saying he's going to do a bad job. I'm saying I don't see it yet. I'm not feeling it yet. I hope
they haven't shown enough of him in these teasers.
Right. And he hasn't really had a lot of interaction with other people. And I think that's really where it's going to feel like Han Solo or not feel like Han Solo. On that note about interactions, I really hope we get some good characters out of this. I'm really hopeful about Kira. And I don't know how the droid is going to work out. That's always something that, that kind of comic relief character in Star Wars either works out really well or really badly. But I'm looking forward to the new characters in this.
Yeah.
Tim, what about you?
I these have made me more excited for the film. And you know, I think we've kind of all been in agreement that it wasn't a film that we necessarily wanted. But I was very much looking forward to kind of the continued world building within the Star Wars galaxy. You know, truly seeing worlds and seeing aliens and droids and ships and all that kind of stuff. Just simply more context and expanding on it. And these two, you know, the TV spot and the teaser have definitely shown a lot of that. And just really cool scenery and things. And I'm very excited about it. I was also very excited that it obviously does seem that they are at least drawing the main themes from Han's background, his origin story, as we know it from the Han Solo trilogy.
Right.
That was done by A.C. Crispin. And, you know, that... I think that was a good move. I really didn't see any need to completely do a different story. They could draw from it and they can still make whatever changes to make it fit within their new vision and fit cinematically. It works for me. I'm excited.
I don't think any of the stuff from Alicia from the first book in the trilogy really is going to end up being there. But I think that enough of what we have become familiar with for his general backstory is going to be there. So perhaps the second and third book, we'll start to get some bigger pieces from, and perhaps even some of the original Star Wars, Han Solo trilogy by Brian Daley from back in the, I don't even remember when they came out, but the Han Solo Adventures where they go out into the corporate sector and stuff like that. I don't think that's going to be part of the story necessarily, but like, I wonder the droid, if that is, I think his name is Bullocks, or
I don't remember.
There were apparently it was two droids. One, it was kind of like a Buck Rogers sort of thing, where one droid was basically a little computer AI that sat in the chest of Bullocks, who was the larger droid. I think the other droid was Blue Max or something. I never read the books, but
like Bastard, you know, Blaster,
Wikipedia, yeah.
Oh boy!
So,
go ahead. Yeah, but before we go into scene by scene or shot by shot, the other thing I'm hoping we get out of this movie is more about the universe. You know, the way things are sitting. I mean, this is set 3 years before A New Hope, so Han is late teens or mid teens, I guess.
Only 3 years? Yep. Is that confirmed?
Isn't that what it's supposed to be? I'm not sure.
Well, he just seems so much younger than Solo was in A New Hope.
Well, maybe it's 5-10. You know, regardless, it's set in that time when the Empire is kind of full on, you know, in control of things. And I'm interested to see how this plays about. I mean, I think it was in the teaser and not the TV spot, but the I guess it was a TV spot where it's kind of his induction into the Imperial Navy. He's being asked, or not in the Navy, but he's just in, you know, the Empire being asked questions of where he wants to serve. And it's not like, okay. So
the recruiter.
Yeah. That sounds kind of cool. I want to see how this plays out and how he, you know, because obviously he doesn't hate the Empire at that point.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to getting that stuff out of it too. So let's kind of dig into the TV spot first. I assume you guys have it up on your screen so we can kind of go through it scene by scene.
And for listeners, assuming you're not like driving your car or something while you're listening to this, pull these up on, you know, YouTube or wherever else you can find them, off of StarWars.com. I think they have them up. And, you know, if you can follow along, because we're going to kind of reference some of the times along with these and take a look at these same shots and maybe we're missing something that you're seeing. And, you know, we'd love to get some feedback on this.
So the scene, the teaser opens up with, you know, somebody in a cockpit looks like flipping a bunch of switches. Mm-hmm. I assume it's a Falcon. I mean, I think you guys would, right? Yeah. I mean, yeah, it makes sense. I mean, that's the central ship of the story, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go right into the, the induction or indoctrination of him into the Imperial Navy, I guess, right? Where they're asking him questions, you want to make a difference, you know, and he's like, yeah.
This looks like a recruitment center. I mean, there's some security, but there's a lot of stormtroopers and other Imperials. There's also lines of citizens, you know, just kind of queued up for something, and then they go into the conversation. So, yeah, it seems it's kind of a recruitment
center. I don't think
this
scene goes along with that dialogue, per se.
It may not.
We know these things. Yeah, you know, they throw things up and they make it look a little different than it really is. But the thing after this, though, that really gets me is, I think, a very cool scene is that Star Destroyer coming through this circular type cloud tunnel that is going through with lightning and everything.
Oh, that's incredible.
That's awesome. I can't wait to see that on a big screen. That is going to look impressive.
Now we see this same shot, but it seems a little bit different from a different perspective. So I don't know if this was a directorial thing where they did different perspectives of the same shot, or we just kind of see a continuation of this. But in the teaser, you will see the TIE fighters coming out of the belly of the Star Destroyer. And in particular, there's this one TIE fighter, and I'm looking at 10 seconds here, that is kind of right front and center coming out of the belly of this Star Destroyer. And it kind of has this little extra pod on it. It's not a full-size pod like the TIE bomber. In the teaser, we see this thing throwing out like either really heavy laser blasts or like a proton torpedo or something like that. Something larger than just the regular lasers that a TIE fighter has are coming out of the side pod. So this is an interesting, I love ships. And so as soon as I see something new, I like jump all over that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I never really got into TIE fighters, like just the generic traditional TIE fighters that much. And now seeing them in the new movies coming out, it's like, oh yeah, it's awesome. Those TIE fighters again. I think it's purely a nostalgic thing, but I kind of like the design of this one because it's not over the top. It's not crazy different. It's a variation, like you said, basically of the TIE bomber. But it still feels like the traditional, that era of Star Wars.
Yeah.
I'm always impressed to see new TIE fighters that are not just the, you know, cannon fodder TIE fighter with no shields.
Right.
Just throw massive quantities of them at the enemy and be done with it. I want to see tactical ships. I want to see ships that have heavier firepower, that have shields, that do other stuff besides just, you know, overwhelm the enemy with numbers.
Oh yeah. And that's why I like, you know, and slight diversion here, but from Rogue One, I love the TIE Striker. In fact, that was a Lego that I got like really early on, as soon as it was released, as a, you know, an atmospheric TIE fighter, you know, which is really cool. And so, yeah, I like a lot of the different variations. Obviously in Rebels, we've seen even more variations of TIE fighters. So they've really explored a lot with it, and they've drawn from the old EU because a lot of that stuff came from there, but we've also seen some new things too.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed that we're probably not going to see any more of the TIE Interceptor. We might still see the Defender a little bit, depending on what they do after Rebels, but I always like the Interceptor.
Yeah, cool looking ship.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, depends what Thrawn takes with him for the new trilogy.
That's true.
Only the best for Thrawn. Okay, so as we progress through the trail a bit more, we now have you know, back to the induction officer here asking him what he wants to do and, you know, what branch of the Empire he wants to join. And he says, "I'm going to be a pilot, the best pilot in the galaxy." Okay, I mean, that's pretty gutsy, you know, for a young kid to say, but it kind of fits in with the Han Solo character. Let's see here. Then there was a complex scene of speeder chases, I guess, right? And
yeah,
I like the two. Are those droids or are those? They've got to be droids.
They look like droids.
First, I thought they were droids. A trooper, but yeah, they look like droids to me.
They, and it's funny because their external coverings look almost like a short trooper.
Yeah, that was the first thing I thought of.
The coloring and
But if you pause it at 16 seconds when the droid on the right has his left arm up in the air, you can see like the piping and stuff underneath the armpit on the torso.
Yeah. Right.
So, yeah. It's a droid.
And you see the hinged articulation joint at his elbow too.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. So definitely droids. And this whole thing goes on during the conversation between, you know, Han and the induction officer there. But that looks like it'd be a fun scene. I mean, car chase, speeder chase, be fun.
And I like the fact that we see
more of that.
We see more of it, and it's different shots in the teaser versus the TV spot. I like that they did that. It's basically they're not revealing a whole lot more, so we're not getting over-spoiled on stuff, but we're getting to see different angles and things on the scenes between the two promotional material.
Yeah, it was nice to see, in the teaser for the, in the TV spot, it was more of a voiceover for that whole conversation between Han and the Imperial officer overlaying a lot of the stuff. Where in the teaser, we didn't get that. We got more of just the raw action.
Yep.
So now we see a hallway of a ship. And I mean, I'm not sure what you guys think, but this looks like maybe a clean version of the Falcon.
Yeah, that's the hard thing because really it looks clean. Very Imperial.
It does.
Mm-hmm. And yet it looks like the interior of the Falcon, but oh my gosh, how many binge parties did they have inside the Falcon to make it look like it does now?
Because this is like stark white. It's like, whoa, huh, man, you need to get some 409 and start spraying that baby down.
Yeah. I mean, somewhere between here and A New Hope, I mean, there were people vomiting on the ceiling.
Yeah, I don't want to walk into a replica of the Falcon anymore because now I feel like I need to wear gloves or something.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Maybe this isn't the Falcon. No, I'm serious. If you look, don't look in the hallway, but look down at the end of the hallway. I don't know whether.
I don't know. It's tough to say. Yeah.
We're going to have to go back and do some like side-by-side comparisons of other scenes that we've seen from this shot of the Falcon. I think in A New Hope, and I think maybe in The Force Awakens, just before Han and Chewie come in. In fact, that might even be in the background there. That might even be the door they come in from.
I mean, I know we're meant to believe that this is the Falcon, but I really do believe this is the Falcon. It just looks like this is the nice, new, clean version of the Falcon.
But then, you know, we get the scene right after this where it's outside the Falcon. And sure, it's at night and it's kind of, you know, overcast or foggy, but it doesn't look all that new from that angle.
It's tough to tell with the lighting. So.
It is tough to tell with lighting, but I don't know. It doesn't look all that new, but who knows? And that's one of the things I'm sure we're going to get in this movie is the backstory of the Falcon. You know, how it got transferred, how it was lost by Lando and so forth. Okay, as we progress through here, let's see. We get a shot of, I assume that's Kira.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Emilia Clarke. I tell you, she is the one thing about this movie I'm most curious about. I am a big fan of hers. I think she looks so much better with dark hair than that platinum Daenerys Khaleesi stuff.
Go ahead. It'll be really neat to see what she does with the character. And she's a great actress. She's a powerful actress. She uses her emotions very well in her acting. And so I'm excited to see what the character of Kira is all about and what she does with this film.
Yeah.
I fully expect, you know, we talk a lot about expectations. I fully expect her to nail whatever this part is. And I expect that her portrayal of whatever this character ends up being is going to be one of the highlights of this film.
Yeah.
I think this will be the thing that people are talking about at least as much as anything else, which coming out of a Han Solo movie is saying a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also goes to speak volumes about what we don't want per se.
Right. Right.
You know, yeah. Han. Let's see, progressing through here. What do we get to next? We have,
get the droid.
We do.
A droid.
Do we, do we have a name for him yet?
No. Not that. I've been trying not to get spoilers. I've gotten what I'll call soft spoilers.
Okay.
Like the front of the Lego box, you know, promotional stuff. But I haven't really been getting spoilers this time around. I've been trying to avoid them for once.
Well, I don't want to spoil the audience. I mean, of course, we definitely want to maintain that kind of freedom. And I've been a big one for saying I always avoid spoilers. I don't want to know anything until I get to the movie. This is one movie I don't care. I want spoilers. If it come across, it's not going to hurt my feelings because I don't care about the movie per se for the story.
I find that fascinating. Like, I understand completely, and it makes sense. But like, from all the years I've podcasted with
it's totally not my character.
No, this is not your MO at all. Now, that being said, too, I mean, normally we don't consider character names to be spoilers. So if we knew what I'm just saying, because I haven't been keeping up with spoilers, I haven't also gotten all of the character names. I know Kira. I don't remember what Woody Harrelson's name is. And I don't know the robots. The droid. Excuse me.
Droid. Yeah. OK, so now we got this really funky train.
Wait, now this I'm curious, Lou, what do you know about the movie that we don't?
I don't. I haven't been searching anything out, but I'm not.
So you're okay with the spoilers. You just haven't been trying to get any.
Right, right. I'm probably going to start, tell you the truth, but I have not been actively searching them out.
Okay.
But I wouldn't go, oh my God, I just ruined the whole movie for myself if I just came across something that said, you know, Han's mother was, you know, whatever. Who knows?
Who's Han's mother? We need to know.
I think this train is really cool.
This is awesome.
There's been a lot of people on Twitter who have said, hey, this kind of looks like a different take on Snowpiercer, which it totally does. Cool. I can get that.
So what I love it's a most about this type train with an upper and lower car.
Yeah. Most about it is that when you look at the front of it, it's very reminiscent of like an AT-ST.
Oh,
it has that general shape. You have the vented openings.
I was thinking Cylon, probably because of the red lighting and stuff.
The red eyes.
Yeah, the AT-AT thing makes more sense.
See, I was thinking the way that wheel's mounted in the nose, it was like half of the tumbler from Batman.
Oh, yeah, there's a wheel there. Oh, yeah, that's cool. Yeah. Okay.
Also, can I just say,
pretty rugged snow terrain. Looks pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just about to say, I love the fact that this is a mountainous, snowy environment. For all the different environments we see in Star Wars, and I know there's sand elsewhere in the TV spot in the teaser, but I like that there seems to be quite a bit of stuff taking place on this kind of mountainous, snowy area. I love, visually speaking, I love this. I love all the saturation of blue.
It's much more interesting than just...
Sand. It's more dynamic. I mean, sand is flat and it blows around. This is, I mean, every little ridge and crevice and the snow falling over things. And yeah, I love this.
So right after that quick shot of the train, we get a quick shot of Woody Harrelson. And then we get some singer in a nightclub with some floating weird thing next to her.
Yeah, that's what happens when you shrink Yoda down and put him in a jar.
Oh, boy. Back to said train, it looks like, in a pretty cool fight scene on top of the train.
It's kind of a gimme that, like, if you have a train in a movie, you have to fight on top of the train.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That does make sense. I mean, you have to.
Now,
but who's this fight? I mean, the people who are fighting in this, there's a humanoid, and then there's something that's like armored and alien looking that's like really cool. And we only get a flash of it.
Mm-hmm. So I did a lot of freeze framing of this and kind of picking it apart. From what I can tell, that's Woody Harrelson's character.
Okay. The humanoid.
I'm figuring that based on the outfit and the cut of certain spots in the outfit that then when he's on the train flap around a certain way and things like that, he's dual wielding blasters. Looks like he has something covering his eyes, like a protective visor, almost like a Geordi LaForge sort of thing from what I can tell, but it's hard. Okay. It's hard because of the resolution.
Train going hundreds of miles an hour out in the snow. Of course he's got that protection on.
Well, I would hope so.
True.
Now, the thing he's fighting, humanoid, we don't know whether it's alien or not. It's wearing some kind of armor. And what's really awesome is it has on its forearm, and this, whoever this character is, you see him elsewhere in the teaser spot too. And his forearms, he's wearing some sort of gauntlets, but in this shot, they've fanned out like bird feathers to act as two shields. And he's actually got his arm up and deflects one of the blaster bolts from Woody Harrelson's character with these shields. And then while he's got these shields with his forearms, which actually cover a decent amount of space, he's also got this giant sword. So this looks pretty cool.
Yeah. At 31 seconds, you get a good shot of that gauntlet with that the kind of the fanned out shield on it.
Yeah.
From behind. And then at 32 seconds, and it's a touch blurry in the freeze frame, but you see like the mask is almost like skull like, and there's like horns or antlers coming out of it. It's really, really funky. It's part of it is funny, speaking of Game of Thrones. But part of it is like, there's almost seems to be like a General Grievous vibe coming from this.
I don't know what it is. It's got kind of a Jaffa vibe from Stargate.
Okay. All right.
It's got like the little thing coming down to the side of the head next to the helmet thing there. Maybe it's Teal'c.
it's really interesting. I'm curious to see what this creature is. And, you know, if this is like one of the big bads that we're dealing with.
So we got a shot of Lando now.
Yeah.
Flashing with some kind of light. Looks like a ship landing towards him, I guess, maybe.
Donald Glover looks like he's absolutely loving that scene. I mean, I'm sure it's acting, but it's cool to see Donald Glover as Lando in a scene. And there's a similar one in the teaser where he looks like he's just owning that role.
I think he's going to be a great Lando. I really, really do.
He's the other thing about this movie that I'm really curious about. Him and Kira.
There's two things here, and we don't really get in this the good shot of Alden Ehrenreich, but we do in the we get several good shots in the teaser. But between Donald Glover and Alden Ehrenreich, you know, Donald Glover does not look like Billy Dee, and Alden Ehrenreich does not look like Harrison Ford. But what I will say is that Donald Glover looks like Lando and Alden Ehrenreich looks like Han. And that this is another moment where people may think, Tim, you're high. But they look like the characters that they're supposed to be portraying. And if you can kind of put away for a moment the fact that Harrison Ford is Han Solo. He's not. Harrison Ford played Han Solo. Step this back a few years, and when you look at the clothes he's wearing, and even though we don't see a lot of him, you can just kind of see how he carries himself. Alden Ehrenreich is Han Solo, and Donald Glover is absolutely spot on Lando Calrissian.
I'm with you on the Donald Glover thing, and I agree with your point, but Ehrenreich hasn't convinced me yet on Han Solo. And I'm perfectly okay, and I can accept the fact that they're two different actors. That aspect of it isn't the problem for me. For me, it's about the mannerisms.
Sure.
It's to some extent about the vocal patterns too.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But a lot of it's just going to be the mannerisms, and it's also going to be part of the writing. I mean, let's face it, if they don't write like, I won't get into it right now. We'll get into it when we get into it. The scene at the end of the teaser itself, I felt like it had an opportunity to make that feel like Han. And to me, it didn't really feel like Han. And that probably scared me, not scared me, but like that.
Yeah, it makes you worry.
Was more disappointing than anything I've seen in the teasers, because I'm like, oh, they didn't really capture anything about Han as a character, like the concept of him saying that sort of thing. But it didn't feel like that's the way Han would have said it, or that that's the type of reaction he would have had while saying it and while reacting. It felt like.
Well, let me throw this out to you though about that in how Aaron Reich's going to portray Han Solo. Mm-hmm. Han Solo in this movie is earlier, whether it's 3, 5, 8 years, whatever it's going to be before New Hope. Han's been through a lot of stuff in those 3, 5, or 8 years.
Sure.
Those experiences will mold your personality and your reactions and how you react to stimuli outside of yourself. So I can totally see him being a different acting character in this movie than he was in A New Hope.
I can agree with that.
As long as I can see a progression, kind of see where he can go from, okay, this is what he was when he was, 19 versus 22 or 28, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's why I'm not saying it sucks. I'm saying that I'm hoping to see exactly what you just said, Lou. I haven't seen it yet. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping to get that in this movie, but I'm not convinced yet, but I'm optimistic that I will be.
Okay. So moving along, we do see the Falcon flying through a storm. And if you pause it at 37 seconds, you can make out the new nose or the old nose or whatever we want to call it without the notch.
Oh, it's 35 seconds on mine, but it's a little,
and some other,
it's interesting.
Some other differences too on the, there's less crap hanging off of it.
I don't see a weapons replacement either.
Yeah, it's right off the assembly line. So I think that it's not just, I'm not really getting the nose too well in my, well, I guess a little.
It's hard to see. Just the outline. Yeah.
There's a scene in the teaser where you can kind of pick it up a little bit too, but not too good.
Yeah. And I'm sure that's going to be a reveal in the movie, probably.
Want it to be a reveal in the movie. I'm sure it's going to be revealed on the interwebs before that. I'm sure Twitter will blow up again.
Probably. Okay, so now we have Han looking through shadowy grates, it looks like, or something. I don't know if it's through a security window, maybe. They ask him for his name, right? And that's when they show the logo.
And then Han and Chewie.
Yeah, little buddy film story at the end.
Yeah, that looks like Chewie's putting his hand on Han's shoulder to kind of...
to push him
like
off
he has
that
a confession
cliff.
To make. Han, remember the other day when you didn't know who farted in the cockpit? Yeah,
buddy, that was me. Now, I must say, Chewie's looking a little thinner than he was in the other movies. He's put on a few pounds over the years, maybe, because he looks thin.
Could be. He's like 200 years old.
We call it bulked up, Lou.
Oh, okay, yeah. And my doctor said I got to bulk down. So
I know we're getting ahead of ourselves here, but I like the fact that he had the double bandolier in the teaser. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Like it's different, but it's still completely Chewy.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I was going to be completely upset if they had, Han in the movie here wearing the same clothes he had in New Hope. I'm like, no.
Right.
He has other outfits.
Yeah.
He has a wardrobe. He changes occasionally. It's like,
Knowing how old Chewbacca is, I was expecting that we would get like this big, tall humanoid guy with just like a lot of stubble all over his body. And then we would just find out that all that hair, it just grew over the time period between the Solo movie and A New Hope.
So you're saying he's not really a Wookiee. He's just a really hairy guy.
He's just a really hairy guy. And you know, he has a condition, and that's what makes him a Wookiee.
Okay. So let's jump into the teaser breakdown, which this did feel like a trailer more than a teaser, but they're calling it a teaser. So,
well, I mean, the TV spot was 45 seconds. This is a minute and let's see, aside from the little subscribe thing they have at the end of the YouTube thing, a minute and 28. So, yeah, and also it doesn't give anything
seconds.
Yeah.
The last 19 seconds are ad.
Right.
So,
and it doesn't give anything about the story. So I think that's another thing, mm-hmm. the duration and the fact that it's a montage of clips without being anything that kind of gives you an idea of what's going on.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what defines it as a teaser instead of a trailer.
But we see a lot of new things from this. We also yes. see some things that we saw in the TV spot that like Eric, you said earlier that are like extended. From the quick image that we got in the TV spot, now we're seeing more.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's some cool stuff here. I mean, it starts off again in a cockpit. It mm-hmm. looks to be an extension of the same shot that we saw in the TV spot.
And if you get to flip that many switches to get the ship going, then you talk about some cockpit resource management stuff going on there. Because wow.
Yeah.
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 Okay, so we get the line from Han saying I've been running scams in the street since I was 10. So mm-hmm. we know he's been either in an unloved home or an orphan since he was a young boy. We get more of that speeder chase.
And this a one lot looks, more, actually.
This one looks a lot yeah. more detailed. He's got he's got a girlfriend with him, I guess.
Yeah, now that's... When you pause it around 10 seconds, you get a point where the lighting happens to hit her face. Okay. That's not Amelia Clark, is it?
No.
It doesn't look like
I
her. No.
So. I didn't think so. Okay.
What I would like to point out here, and you see it at 9, 10, 11 seconds, the dice.
Yeah. Hanging from the river, or what would be the river.
Oh, yeah. Good catch.
Yeah. That's very yeah. cool.
I missed that entirely.
But this shot also, it, you know, same thing at 9, 10, especially... at 11 seconds when the lighting really hits him. This is the scene here where he looks like Han Solo, you know, and he definitely does not look like Harrison Ford, but he looks like Han Solo. It looks like, I mean, he is in that part and that's what definitely hit me when I first watched this was, yeah, he's doing it.
Yeah.
He's in the groove.
I think you're right, Tim. Like I said, I think he feels like what Han should have been like years before we saw him in A New Hope.
Yeah.
More brash, maybe more young and inexperienced. The chase scene looks awesome. You see a trooper or something go flying off of whatever kind of mounted bike he had there. It would look pretty cool.
Yeah. You know, I have to say the framing of a lot of the shots that we've seen, especially for this, but some of the others too, I'm really mm-hmm. impressed with the direction of this. I don't know how much of this were the guys whose names I keep forgetting from the Lego movie or how much of this was Ron Howard or if it was just mm-hmm. kind of a director of photography made some of the choices. But I really like how some of these shots are set up.
Yeah. It's really neat. And, you know, it looks like not even a legit road. It looks like they're driving through an industrial complex kind of thing.
Right.
And it's really tight and he's, you know, they're weaving
yep.
around equipment and such. And this stormtrooper-ish looking, you know we have a variety of, we have a number of different varieties of stormtroopers, you know, crashes into something there. And you can kind of see the, what this trooper's wearing. And it looks like like the helmet actually looks a lot like the hover tank driver, mm-hmm. but the rest of the armor is kind of like a scout trooper. You know, really kind of interesting variation of stormtrooper armor.
Yeah, it's basically you've got a torso piece and two leg pieces covering the shins, and yep. mm-hmm. then just pants. Like yep. you don't have any sort of a.
Huh? Yeah, no protective stuff on his thighs or anything. But right. On the scene after that, when he's getting up, when the speeders are going by him and you kind of see him getting up from the prone position, the helmet looks more like a traditional Stormtrooper helmet right there.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's the angle. It's blurry. Something that's shaped a little bit differently about the helmet, mm-hmm. and I think that's kind of the confusing thing for how little we get to see. And it also looks iron. It doesn't look like the plasteel of, you know, the white Stormtroopers. It's not. When I was writing down the show notes, I almost typed in silver, and I'm like, well, but not like Phasma. It's right. Very kind of a gunmetal,
dull,
dulled out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yep.
Almost like a brushed metal sort of thing. Yeah.
Yep.
So just to finish up that chase scene, you get that cool scene now where they're on like a pier over the water.
Yep.
That looks pretty slick. Everything's wet. They're kind of
power sliding.
Yeah. Almost like the power sliding through these turns and stuff. It looks pretty awesome.
It does.
Yeah, it's really, really neat visual. I love seeing this stuff, and you know, it's you've got in the background what looks to be, you know, like an incredible matte painting. And then the effects they've done in the foreground with these vehicles is just incredible.
Yeah.
And we got a scene more of those mountains that I think we saw from that train scene, mm-hmm. with some cool cloud work and stuff. Very pretty awesome looking scenery. I think
this is already my favorite location in Star Wars.
You want to go back to Tatooine, admit it.
Yes, I do, with Starkiller Base.
Hey, I'm thinking Scarif, you know, a little beach action, palm trees.
Yeah.
I would take Scarif over Tatooine any day. I mean, at least
I don't mind the sand as long as Scarif's there's water nearby.
A little bit more of an oasis. Yeah, well, you can get out of the sand. That's
right, you wash it off. Okay, yeah. So we got that familiar scene of the hallway again, the very nice pristine Falcon, maybe, or some
still
other ship.
Back on the snow.
Mm-hmm. Same outside scene of Han looking up at the cockpit of the Falcon. Then
we have sand.
And we're sand.
Yeah, then we got sand. But there's water, so, you know, that's not bad.
True.
And we get the introduction of Woody Harrelson here. And is this where he says that, yeah, hey, kid, I'm putting together a team. You in?
Mm-hmm.
And here we get the team.
So, yeah, we got the droid. And was that Emilia Clarke?
I think that is. If you pause it and you look in, kind of the way she walks...
Yeah,
okay. And the bone structure in the face. I mean, again, I wish we had a higher resolution copy here, but I'm convinced that's Emilia Clarke. And then the droid behind her. And it looks like she's kind of walking out of the Falcon.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be. Yep.
And she's wearing very well-tailored clothes.
Although,
that white sharp shirt, though, with the red cape, it doesn't, the blue shoulder thing doesn't really work.
Okay.
No? Oh, I think it's sharp.
I'm a fan.
And I like the colors. I think it probably like says something about the colors.
Says something about her character
droid
too.
The droid has very interesting legs.
Yeah, they're very thin.
Yeah, they're thin and well, from one perspective, but from the side, they're flat and wide.
Yeah.
Just a very different styling of a droid than we've seen before.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see more of this droid.
So I'm getting the impression that she's kind of affluent.
Mm-hmm.
Probably. Well, to some extent. I wonder if she owns the Falcon and Lando ends up getting it from her and then Han gets it from Lando.
Could be.
That'd be a twist.
I imagine, just like from how she's dressed and the polish that she would keep a nice clean ship. And well maintained, and then you know Lando probably didn't have it for very long before Han got it, and well,
and now she's rolling over in her grave knowing how dirty
what the hell did you do to my ship,
you know. Han's just living in this thing never cleaning it, you know.
Yeah.
Let's see, a shot of Lando looking mm-hmm. very suave.
Yep. And a woman, do we know who she is?
I don't know who she is. No.
Now we know she's played by Tandy Newton.
Yeah.
From Westworld and various other things. I don't know anything about who the character is supposed to be.
She's got a hell of a blaster.
I was
going to
say, she's got a pretty big gun. Yep.
Yeah.
Almost looks like he's got a round.
Off.
Yeah.
And almost kind of like a steampunkish type of outfit.
Mm-hmm.
You see goggles hanging around her neck. There's some kind of like tubing that goes down her arm.
Yep.
you know, leather looking jacket. Yeah, kind of steampunkish type of styling here.
She's in the wrong movie. She was looking for Wild Wild West 2. let's see. Now we've got, I don't know who this character is.
It's some cool looking little alien dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
in a ship.
You notice he's got four arms, he or she.
Does it?
Yeah. Pan back and forth.
At from least about three.
30.
I see three.
36.
Yeah, I see three. What, one on the right side and two on the left side.
There's one. Okay, so his or her right, where he's throwing away whatever that piece of metal or a tarp or something like that is. Mm-hmm. Behind that, there's one that is holding the side of whatever seat mechanism thing.
Okay. All right.
So, because okay. you'll notice the sleeve of that is the same as the sleeve on his left arm that's up in the air.
Gotcha. Okay.
And then behind him, is that, it almost looks like someone in an Imperial outfit.
Looks
wearing
like an Imperial hat.
I can't tell with that
yeah.
hat. Unless it's yeah. goggles or visors on the hat, but.
It could be.
Or it's Woody Harrelson's character.
Possibly.
Because if you think about what he was wearing when he was on top of the train.
Yeah, the trench maybe. Coat sort of thing. Yeah, it could yeah. be. Maybe it's just the shiny thing on the head's goggles. This alien, though, I'm curious about. An alien we've never seen before.
Yeah, definitely a new race.
That makes me happy.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, the four arms. Kind of cool.
I have to wonder, I mean, just with the stature of the creature, if this is, if this was done by Warwick Davis, potentially, because he is in the film. Usually he doesn't do something that's like mocap like this is, but I don't know.
Not good quote. Sure. I don't know.
And then we go to something that looks like a drug den.
This is almost certainly where Warwick Davis is going to show up. Listen, when there's a drug den in Star Wars, there's one guy you can count on being there, and that's Warwick Davis.
And this room
Hans
is filled,
opium den.
Yeah, and this room is filled with a bunch of creatures. You can see some humanoids. You can see some different aliens in there that we've never seen before. Mm-hmm. I am hopeful, I will say, although I think I see a Weequay in there at least, because I am hopeful, and I know Eric has expressed this before from the scene at Maz's palace from The Force Awakens, that, you know, it was a little upsetting that there were no familiar aliens in there at all.
Right.
I mean, it's cool to see new ones, but let's see some that
are
familiar.
I know it's a big galaxy, but come on, show me some of the same faces we've seen before.
Yeah, so I'm hopeful. It looks like I see things with like eye stalks, kind of like a Weequay does in this shot. I'm looking at like 37, 38 seconds.
Just off the Han's left.
Yeah. So
like three eye stalks there, or two of them at least. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean this
that's
could be interesting.
You mean a Reese?
Reese, yes. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Okay. I was like, where do you see the Weequay? Okay. Yeah. So that might be the only alien. I'm pausing. I'm going back and forth here. That's the only alien that looks recognizable. I'm even looking up on like the balcony area up top.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's something with a really big head to the left.
You know, there can't just be like 5 billion different species, and there's like 10. Members of each race. Like,
right.
There's got to be more Weequays in the universe, and more Aquilishes, and more Shistavians and Stifels.
And not to be you know racist for aliens, but I mean races tend to group together.
Yeah,
you don't see like 10
due to cultural similarities.
And there are 10 different. Yeah, right. And there are 10 different aliens. It's 10 of them, and you have like 8 of one race and maybe 2 of another. But you know.
Yeah.
Not the way Star Wars rolls.
Yeah.
Okay, now we got a shot of Chewie. Well,
and real quick, though, before we move on, you notice that I thought that Han's positioning here is interesting. He's standing up on a platform away from the table that everybody's crowded around.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the group in front of him is all centrally looking at something, so presumably it's a gambling table. He's not moving toward it. He's not noticed by anybody else. It's very much like he's maybe an outsider there, and he's I'm wondering if this isn't maybe earlier in the, well, it can't be too early in the film. No, he's got his traditional blaster pistol there on his thigh. So I'm trying to figure out where this may play in and what's going on in the scene, because it looks like the Han Solo that we would know now, he would be owning that scene, and instead he's just kind of standing there wobbling back and forth.
Now remember, he's younger and not as experienced.
Right. Right. So that's what I'm trying to get a sense for, is his confidence level and
But the silhouette we see is 100% Han Solo. I mean,
Absolutely. Like, no, he owns it in that scene.
10 years ago, you could have thrown, you know, dropped this image in front of me, and I would have said, okay, so we have Han Solo in some kind of gambling pit.
Right.
It's Han Solo. It's, you know, 100%.
I mean, the DL-44 on his hip kind of helps, though. That's also...
Well, yeah, that's part of the silhouette. Iconic. Part of the look of Han, yeah.
I mean, if you were wearing a fedora and had a whip on his hip, you'd assume it's Indiana Jones. Like, the silhouette is partially helped by the weapon. That's definitely Han.
Han needs
the way he's standing
fedora
in that scene. Yeah.
Okay, so now we have Chewie acknowledging the yes and joining the crew.
Yep. We're back in the snow.
Yep. Then we got a scene of Lando in the cockpit of presumably the Falcon with the droid.
And they're both giving little salutes.
Yeah, they do some kind of
little
funky
two-fingered salute.
You know, hey, let's go for a thing.
I love that it's like perfectly synchronized. It's a great thing.
You know how many takes they probably had to do to get the robot's timing perfectly the same with... Never mind.
They didn't.
I know. Anyway.
More switches.
Okay, let's see here. What else we have?
Lots of switches.
More switches.
Lots of switches.
The hyperspace lever.
Yep. Piloted by Lando and the droid.
Lando. Yeah.
Yep, with Han sitting in the back seat. And we don't see who's in the seat behind Lando. Only three of the four seats.
Yep.
Right. So it doesn't belong to Han yet.
And then we're back in this club with the singer.
Yeah, much wider shot. And again, with the aliens, I see one in the middle that kind of looks like Groot.
I did notice that. Yep.
And otherwise, a bunch of Twi'leks.
Yep.
And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And Amelia Clark again.
And then we're back in this beachy area here with a, looks like a very Westernish standoff, especially with how this shot is done, just kind of, you know, behind Han's holster, as he's facing off against a bunch of people. And actually the one in the middle, even though it's very blurry. Okay. So when you get to 51 seconds, it does show it.
Yep.
This is the dude that they were fighting on top of the train.
In the snowy mountains, and this is definitely not snowy mountains.
Just want
to point that out. Is that a vibro axe he's got, maybe instead of a sword?
Yep. Could be. A vibro axe.
Interesting.
And you see, it's kind of an interesting group of bandits. They're, you know, definitely some kind of group of outlaws. Maybe some different races. You definitely see a lot of different types of armor and weapons and some really cool stuff.
I just want to point
some really
this out.
Neat background.
At 51 seconds, if you look all the way there, so there's 12 characters in the shot here. If you look all the way to the far right, with the exception of the helmet being slightly different, that outfit looks a lot like Bausch. From Return of the Jedi, the way the vest falls and the belts.
Yep.
No, that's interesting.
Cool.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, and you see some kind of, they look like, you know, living units, kind of like domes in the background. And then you just kind of see some miscellaneous, looks like, you know, just junk or structures of some sort.
Yeah, so this is in the sand. You can see the water in the background on the right. So presumably this is in the same general area, or at least the same planet or something, as where we see Woody Harrelson and Chewbacca and Han earlier. And Yeah, like you said, there's some houses and kind of a little makeshift village set up here. So I'm kind of wondering what that connection is.
Yeah. And if this is still on Corellia or if it's someplace else.
Right.
Well, I think one benefit, at least of Corellia, at least from how it was portrayed in the EU, was that Corellia was more Earth-like, where, you know, it wasn't a Hoth, it wasn't a Tatooine, where it just had, you know, one environment.
It had more than one environment? No, come on.
Yeah, but so, Corellia was also the biggest planet in the Corellian system, which was also a big system. So I kind of always got the impression it was like Earth, but a lot more advanced, or almost like a Coruscant, but not Coruscant. Like,
sure.
You know what I mean? Like it not.
Yeah.
Coruscant is a gross over exaggeration of that. But I always saw Corellia as a little more high tech, more modern.
Oh, yeah.
This scene doesn't fit with what I would think of Corellia at all. But like the nightclub thing, I could see that being on Corellia.
Yeah, but I'd imagine, you know, unlike. It can't be the entire world being fully developed and fully, you know, technologically
advanced.
Have you
seen a Star Wars movie? You have a whole planet that's a desert and a whole planet that's a swamp. And no, I agree with you. I agree.
Okay, now this next scene, you don't get much out of it, but wow.
I picked this apart.
I want to know what's going on.
Anything else in there? So I think this is a bounty hunter.
Okay.
I think this is the only scene in either of these two trailers that this happens. So if you go to 52 seconds, so first of all, they're wearing a cape.
Mm-hmm.
Underneath the cape kind of flips off, and you've got this big blast on in front of the door there when he or she's hitting the two droids. You see something underneath that looks like maybe holsters on either side.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you've got the cape. Maybe this is Woody Harrelson's character dressed up in armor or something. Look at the helmet. This is definitely not Darth Vader, but it's got that kind of a dome with a little flare at the bottom, like Darth Vader's helmet or like some of the Imperial officers from A New Hope.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you proceed through the scene to about 53 seconds, he's got two blasters. And I don't know whether these are the same two blasters that Woody Harrelson had, because we couldn't see them that clearly. He looks like he's wearing gloves, and he's got some kind of a chest armor plate and a mask over his face.
Yeah.
So I think either this is Woody Harrelson wearing some sort of disguise or armor, or it's a totally different character who's a bounty hunter.
Yeah. And it's not any bounty hunter or other character that I think we're familiar with from other films. So
it's not Mandalorian armor. It's not any of the ones from Empire Strikes Back. Something completely new, or again, Woody Harrelson.
Right.
Back to the droid from Lando's cockpit.
Mm-hmm.
And then a gloved hand throwing a switch. Who is that? That's Han, I guess. Yeah,
that's Han.
You can kind of see his face on the side there. Then this next scene of a transport, I guess, with something being, I don't know if it's being stolen from the transport.
These are cool ships.
And five or six guys on like speeder bikes that have it under cable tow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's like, you know, it's like a heist that we're seeing take place here, which kind of matches, like maybe these guys go with the group that we saw before that Han was facing off against on the beach there. You know, cause they do look like kind of a bunch of thugs. So, yeah, there could be something associated with that.
Now, the piece here still looks like it could be part of that train, one section of the train.
Oh.
It's got wheels in the center underneath it.
I don't know why I didn't pick that up. Yeah, that looks exactly like a
big mouse droid.
No, that is definitely one of the train cars.
Absolutely.
Yeah, good eye.
So this whole movie is a train heist.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. But there's a problem, though. Because if you skip over the second or two of Emilia Clarke, and I assure you that is the last thing in the world I want to do.
Why would you skip over?
I would never. But at 57 seconds, you see
some stuff blowing up on him.
Yeah, and it looks like that other ship that was with it that Han's piloting. And that's a big explosion. I've gone back and forth over this. It's not just a ship crashing into something. That is a detonation of something.
Yeah. It's like a small nuke.
Right.
Right.
It's pretty significant.
Well, you know, when those guys on those speeder bikes took the train car, they didn't look like they had it under control. It looked like they were going down pretty fast.
Yeah.
You know, it looks like it was too big for them to carry, and they were just getting sucked down. So that could be what happened.
Yeah.
Big kaboom. Let's see here. Now this next scene, the voiceover talking in this where, you know, she's like, I'm the only one who knows who you are. Mm-hmm. Or knows what you are, I guess she says, right?
Yeah.
And then he says, really what's that? If she says scoundrel, I'm going to walk out of the movie.
Now, listen, I have seen so many Star Wars movies and read so many Star Wars books where somebody has a bad feeling about something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That if she says scoundrel, I'll roll my eyes, right. But I mean...
Yeah, I'm being facetious. I wouldn't walk out, but still, it's like she says scoundrel, I'm not going to be happy.
Yeah, that would feel a little forced. I would also be happy if this is the first Star Wars movie where somebody does not indicate they have a bad feeling about something.
I'm okay with it now because it's such an old running joke. I'm okay with it.
But it takes you, because it's now a running joke, it takes me out of the movie.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me. I don't know. Yeah, I'm okay with that. I was actually very. I was very happy with it being clever this last time, having it be the droid that did it. I thought that was clever. Clever.
I think that the most clever actual use of it was in Rogue One.
Yes,
where K2SO starts to say it, and they both shut him up.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that was good too. Yep.
Yeah.
So we have the Solo logo. And then it goes back to kind of another aspect or another perspective of this scene with the Star Destroyer coming through this tunnel of clouds kind of thing. You see the Falcon kind of swooping in. And this is if you advance to like a minute 7, this is where you get a little bit better perspective of that profile with the front end.
The nose job
of the ship together. And then you get just following that, you get again that cool new TIE fighter with that other pod.
And this is definitely a different angle, like you said, Tim. And I think it's probably later in the movie because the ships are the TIE fighter is already out of the Star Destroyer, so they're already on the way. So
I'm gonna speculate here that this might be the Kessel Run. I'm going to make that speculation right now. And you know, Han makes the run because he's being pursued. And Kessel is the Kessel Run was near a black hole, was it not?
Not in canon anymore, but the Legends version of it, where they kind of retconned the whole parsecs thing because parsecs are a measure of distance. Was that it's near the Maw, which is it's a big black hole, and
which a cluster of black holes, and
so the Falcon was so fast it was able to escape the event horizon. It was able to get closer to the event horizon without getting sucked into it, and therefore was able to cut down on the distance it took to make the Kessel Run.
And so I'm kind of wondering if this is their like cinematic portrayal of what it would look like near a black hole.
Works for me, I guess. If it is.
Swirl of clouds. I mean, they're clearly in space.
But in a black hole, if you had some sort of, let's call this a nebula. Let's say it's not atmospheric, though. I don't know, nebula. Because of the lightning and stuff leads me to believe it might be atmospheric. But if it's not, wouldn't that get sucked into the black hole if it's that close to the black hole? I mean, it wouldn't just linger there.
It should. Long. Yeah.
I am not an astrophysicist. Even light
can't escape a black hole. So
not an astrophysicist, guys. And it's Star Wars.
Yeah. Let's get Neil deGrasse Tyson on here and we'll ask him.
No.
And he'll say, whoa, let me start at the beginning with what's wrong here. And I'll be like, no. Just this one thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
So then we're back in the cockpit, and interestingly enough, we see Lando in the back seat.
Right.
And
looking rather scared.
Yeah, and Han and Chewie up front.
They got nothing.
And Amelia Clark in back. Kira.
More switches.
Yep, and
you know, he escapes. He says, "You know, oh, thought they had us there for a minute or something to that effect." Mm-hmm. And then it gets weird for me.
I like this one scene though at a minute 12 where he flips the Falcon and hits one of the wings of the TIE fighter.
That was good.
And then smashes it against like this asteroid or something. I thought that was kind of that was neat. I mean, he knows a couple maneuvers, listing lazily to the left. Oh, and this also at a minute 13, casual. This actually probably shows the best perspective of the Falcon,
right?
With the front end pinched together. So, because you kind of see, I think that's the belly of the Falcon there. So that looks really, that's the best view we've had of it yet.
And it looks like there's a weapons emplacement on there now too.
Oh no, I'm sorry. This is the roof. Cause if you, when the lightning flashes, yeah. Yeah, at a minute 13, you see the dish on top. Yeah.
Yep. Oh,
I hope we get an explanation for the nose.
That's not the dish. That is a dish. Not even sure it's an actual dish, but that's not the dish from A New Hope.
No, it's not.
And I do see the weapon emplacement on the top.
Yeah.
What we've seen from the Lego leak.
Uh-huh.
Is that this dish does not face forward. It faces
outward
up. Yeah. Faces outward. Up being the direction of the top of the ship since space doesn't have an up. So it's definitely a different dish than what we had in A New Hope and mounted completely differently, but in the same spot.
I don't know about this Falcon. I'll get used to it, but.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like it.
There's going to be a change.org petition, hashtag not my Falcon.
well, as long you know, as
now
get...
that I get a better shot of it and it's not a Lego, I can kind of see, like, for me, it has to make sense in the migration from it to what we see in A New Hope. And it didn't really make it for me on the Lego box. This, I can kind of see the physics of how what's there got chopped off and you end up
with. At any rate, we need an explanation for why the difference.
Yeah.
You know, what happened, why it got changed.
Yeah.
And at the end of the movie, we need to see the Falcon the way we've seen the Falcon.
I'm going to say one thing that's going to make everybody roll their eyes, though. let me rephrase that. I'm going to say one additional thing that's going to make everybody roll their eyes. The YT-1300 Corellian transport ship has already made appearances prior to A New Hope in canon.
True.
It appeared in the prequels in the background. It had the forked nose. It did not have a straight nose like this. So if the Falcon's forked nose that we've known for all these years was actually a modification that happened as a result of blah, 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 and that's not a stock YT-1300, it kind of makes the other appearances like not right.
And I'm okay with that, though, overall. Yeah. I mean, like, we had a discussion in Slack a while ago about variants of aircraft. And, you know, take the 737, for example. There are seven different passenger variations from the 737, you know, 200 through 700. Not to mention there's ER versions for extended range. There's, you know, freighter versions of it. There's corporate versions of it. There's military versions of it. So, you know, there could be two or three different versions of the Falcon of the YT-1300. And at some point Han said, you know what? I need that other nose. I'm going to bring it to the shop and get an upgrade.
I don't think they let you put that much text in the change.org petition though, Lou, when you go to respond to those people. I see what you're saying though. And
I'm just saying,
I just hope that we do get an explanation. If we don't, then, he modifies it, and okay. yeah. fine. But mm-hmm. it'd be nice to see.
Yeah, I want a reason behind it. I want why it happened. Yeah.
Right.
And I really do, by the end of this movie, I want to see the Falcon as we know it.
I mean, when you think about it, the Falcon is, I've been making a list of all of the different prominent movie vehicles, like truly unique movie or television vehicles over the years, for kind of a side project that's a secret thing we're not ready to announce yet. And the Falcon is arguably the only ship or vehicle of any sort I can think of that comes close to it would be the Enterprise. As far as the effect yeah. on pop culture over decades and decades.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and there have been some other iconic, you know, the DeLorean from Back to the Future, the General Lee from Dukes of Hazzard. The A-Team van, Star Destroyers, board mm-hmm. ships, Serenity, etc. But, like, the Falcon is... People who don't know Star Wars know what the Falcon is.
Right.
I've met people for whom that's the case. So that's why I guess I'm a little nervous about them going too far with changing it, though it's kind of an accepted thing that Han himself constantly was modifying and shifting the Falcon, so it fits the story for it. I just really hope that they give us that explanation so that we have that connection of the changing of that thing, almost a character, because just like we were talking about earlier, where you can't have one character who's just they are what they are. You need to show yeah. development, you need to show change. The Falcon kind of feels that way too. If we're going to have these changes, we need to show the progress and development to some extent.
Yep. The next scene we see here is pretty much our heroes escaping from Oda Gunga, I think. I mean, they encounter a bigger fish.
I kind of groaned at this. Yeah.
Yeah. Something, you know, definitely organic, with like large tentacles and yeah, like, and spiky
yeah,
and they have things. Lightning on them too. What's the lightning? I don't get that.
That could just be the ionization in the air from that might not be generated by the creature.
Okay. Yeah. So we see, you know, some fancy flying and flips and cool maneuvers.
Fancy flying. And he hits one of the spiky things and breaks it off. I mean, that's not that
he hit a job more than one. There.
Yeah.
And then that's it. You know, Memorial Day and you know, subscribe to their stuff and there it is.
Yeah.
This so. Kaiju thing, I don't know. Seriously, like I didn't have that big a problem with the Rathtars in The Force Awakens, so I know a lot of people did.
I love them. I thought they were fantastic.
Yeah, I thought they were good in that Force Awakens, right.
I didn't mind them, but a lot of people did complain about them and the fact that they're, you know, over the top. I equate this more
to the big fish in the prequels, which I did not like. That
yeah, to me, this is kind of a combination of the worst parts of both. This does not feel Star Wars to me. This feels Cloverfield, Pacific Rim. You know?
Yeah, we'll have to see how they play it out. I mean, if it's just something that's thrown in there to be one more obstacle, then it's kind of silly and gratuitous. If the creature has some kind of a point, and I'll tell you, when I first saw, like when I first saw this and I watch it, I'm like, what in the world was that? And then once I got the clip and I'm going through the clip and I kept on like, just, you know, dragging the indicator forward, mm-hmm. backward, forward, back. I could not understand what in the hell that thing was.
Yeah. So. Well, and if it's one creature and not several, the thing has got to be huge enough that, I mean, you're talking about this thing is going to have effects on the weather on whatever planet this is on, unless it's out in the middle of space.
Maybe it's out in space. Yeah, who knows? I mean, if that's the only thing in this movie that makes you kind of scratch your head, I'll be okay with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Overall, I'm not expecting the movie to be mind-blowing. I'm expecting it to be fun. I'm expecting it to expand on the world building. You know, I think it's going to be, The action will have impact, but I don't think the story is going to have impact.
Right.
I agree. That's kind of what I'm looking forward to.
You know, what I would really like from an anthology movie is I would like to get characters introduced that are good characters that we like, that we want to see more of, and then we actually get to see more of them. And if that's in a TV series, that's fine.
For a while?
If it's in a book or a few books, that's fine. A comic book series, I can't afford to keep up with comics anymore, but so be it. It was hard because Rogue One was a great movie, and I really liked a lot of those characters, and yet we're never going to see them again.
Too bad.
Right. Yeah. Right. And so Rebels, I like those characters and I want to see more of them. And Star Wars is such a vast place that if you're going to create a character and make them interesting and likable, it is a natural thing for the audience to want to see more of that character. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why we get sequels for things in the first place.
Right. You know, it's funny you mentioned Rogue One. I think they've done a better job developing characters in that movie for characters that are going to die than they did in the first two sequel trilogy movies. You know, we've gotten more character development for those people in that one movie than we did from Finn in, you know, two movies.
Yeah.
Not from Rey, but yeah, I would say Finn or Poe.
Maybe not Rey, but Finn definitely, and Poe, I don't think so too, yeah. Well, before we're going to end it here. We're not going to do the extra stuff. We had some feedback we're not going to get to, and we're letting Eric off the hook for his fun fact and trivia because it's running a little late here.
Yeah, we've hit the two-hour mark.
We have. Yeah. It's unusual for us, but we're usually pretty close. One question for you guys, though, before we sign off. Do you think we're going to get any cameos from known characters in this movie besides the ones we've already seen?
Yeah. Yeah, I think we'll get something familiar showing up that's going to kind of make the whole audience go, oh, hey, that's whoever it is.
I know of one.
Oh, don't say it.
You can tell me after we finish recording.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to say it on the air. No spoilers. I will say this because it will warn you against accidentally getting spoiled. It was another thing that was announced in a Lego set. I think it was a Lego set. If not, it was toy related, and it was posted within the last maybe 24, 48 hours. We're recording this February 7th.
Mm.
And it's not a big deal.
I had not seen it. So
is it a spoiler? Yeah. I mean, it doesn't ruin anything. It's not going to affect your enjoyment of the film. So that being said, are we expecting any other than the one I know about? It will not surprise me if we get a walk-on cameo by Boba Fett.
I would love it.
I would hate it. I love Boba Fett.
I would love it because it would make...
It'd be a waste.
Empire, it would make the encounter in Empire more meaningful.
But, well
yeah, I thought about
if
that.
If it's not nearly a walk-on. Right. I mean, meaningful, it would have to have some kind of meaning here. They'd have to have some sort of a connection. Otherwise, I mean, if they're walking past each other down the street, it doesn't do anything. I'm talking about like a frivolous, in the background, useless cameo.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, that's a good point. That's a good point.
I think there will be,
you know, maybe two or three familiar characters that we see. I don't know that there'll be anything really meaningful, but. We'll have something.
Okay. What about you, Lou?
I think we will. I'm just not sure how I feel about it. I don't want to have anything really gratuitous.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't mind having something that fit in with the story that didn't seem like they forced it on us.
You know who I want?
Yeah, if it fits, great. But I don't think I want any cameos here.
We've got Han,
we've got Chewbacca, we've got Lando.
I want Maz.
You want Maz? Okay.
I think that builds a nice bridge to the sequel trilogy and the history that they have and her like for Chewbacca. And I think they can do that pretty quickly without really building any particular story for why she was there, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, quick encounter and then they move on. And I think that could be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Greedo would be cool. And Greedo, they again, they could do it without having to build much behind it.
See, I don't think that Greedo needs to be anything more than he was. I mean, Han worked for Jabba, and so he and Jabba's other employees had awarenesses of each other, but I don't know that they needed to have some big backstory together. Boba Fett, maybe there, but Greedo...
Well, and I'm not
I'd rather see Dengar.
Dengar could be cool. I mean, I'm not even saying to build a big backstory. I think it's just kind of cool, you know, they pass each other in a hallway, you know. And you can say, I mean, just like they did some of the things in Rogue One, you know, where we saw Dr. Evazan and Ponda Baba. You know, I thought that was just a really neat.
If it was something like that, I'd be okay with that. That kind of quick thing, yeah. Okay, cool. Well, we talked about a lot of stuff tonight, and we'd love to get some feedback from listeners. If you've got anything you want to, you know, share with us, your thoughts on the controversial stuff we talked about first, or better yet, the trailers. Give us your thoughts on the trailer, things you hope to see in the movie, you know, what you thought of it, your overall impression. We'd love to hear that kind of stuff. You can do that by sending us an email. Echobase@randomchatter.com is the best way to get a hold of us. It goes to all three of us hosts, and we will read those, and sometimes we'll even talk about them on the air.
And you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/randomchatternetwork, and also on Twitter. We actually posted some stuff earlier today asking people what they thought about all of this news, and we're trying to get more active on Twitter once again. You can find us there at Random Chatter. That's for the whole network. This podcast is at Echo Base Podcast. And you can find each of us on Twitter. I'm at Eric Blythe. That's E-R-I-K-B-L-Y-T-H-E. Lou, where can we find you?
Just my name, Lou Secchi, L-O-U-S-E-C-K-I.
All right. And Tim?
At Qui-Gon Tim. That's Tim with two M's.
And we have a special announcement. We now have an Instagram account.
Woo!
Yay!
And that is, the username's just Random Chatter. I hear Instagram is all the rage with the young whippersnappers these days. I don't know much about it.
It's a visual Twitter, and there will be one specifically for the Star Wars stuff, but right now we don't have that one set up. But for now, it'll be just Random Chatter, and we'll grow from there.
Excellent. All right, and speaking of growth, we've got more things coming over at randomchatter.com. We've got some new shows that are being worked on. And we'll be making announcements over time. But in the meantime, we still have the main Random Chatter show. We've got Movie Rampage coming soon, finally, with the Last Jedi episode, Tim. We promise you it will be out prior to the home video release of The Last Jedi, unless it's not, in which case we're not actually promising that. But it'll be out eventually.
It will. It will. Very soon, Liz and I actually, we finally got our schedules together. And it was rough over the holidays. Travel and illnesses and all sorts of things. So, yeah. But yeah, that's going to be coming out soon. We definitely appreciate everyone spreading the word and helping to support us across the entire network and for all the shows. If you like the stuff that we're doing, please tell people. It helps to leave some great reviews on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever it is you may be getting your podcast from. Click on all the stars, write in some great stuff so people have a little bit of context. Tell your friends, family, loved ones, coworkers, total strangers. You know, someone happens to get into a conversation with you about some Star Wars stuff. You know, please mention us. We definitely appreciate it. We also appreciate some financial support. Everyone has heard my Patreon pitch. Unless this is your first time, head over to randomchatter.com/Patreon, and that will direct you right to the site you need to go to contribute to us. And that helps us, you know, keep the proverbial lights on, helps us keep things going. And especially as we grow, it's a huge help to us. It helps pay for our web hosting fees and data storage and all the things that, that kind of go along with running an organization in a digital world. So it's a huge help. Some things that we're featuring in, you know, through Patreon, we're kind of having some cool updates here. We're doing some audio blogs for our Patreon contributors, and Eric has tossed the first couple out there. They've really been, the first one was an introductory one. The second one was about this migration over to Discord, which we talked about earlier. And So that's kind of just a neat little feature. You get to hear, you know, from Eric, like in the morning when he rolls out of the wrong side of the bed, when, you know, hear him, you know, complaining about his coffee and eating his Cheerios and whatever else. And hey, you know, you never know. Maybe Lou or I or one of the other hosts will be throwing in some audio blogs as well. Not really podcasts, they're just small little things. One person, just single topic, quick random thing out there, which could be any topic. One thing I do want to mention, I mentioned this on Random Chatter yesterday, because I've actually heard that there are some people that weren't aware that Patreon took back a change that they tried to make a couple months ago. So, a lot of folks are probably aware that Patreon tried to tack on this certain percentage of charge to donors. So you weren't just donating $1 a month, you'd be donating whatever it was, $1.12 a month or something like that. There were actually a lot of people across Patreon, not just with Random Chatter, but with a lot of other things that use Patreon, where people left. Patreon, after like 2 or 3 weeks, they heard, they definitely heard people's complaints on this, and they rolled that back. So those charges no longer occur.
It's just that they're taken out of the donations that we get. They're not passed on to the listener. That's the important thing.
Right. Everyone has to have a profit model. Everyone's got to make some money. So that's cool with Patreon covering their operational expenses and all that. But there is no additional charge to donors. So if you're listening to this and you withdrew your Patreon contribution because Patreon did something stupid, well, they recognize they did something stupid and they put things back the way they were. So please come back. If you left, please come back. We're having a little bit of restructuring of perks. We know we did this some last year. It's not a full restructuring. We're actually adding in some additional things. So we're not really taking anything away. We're adding in and kind of refining things a little bit with our perks, particularly at the $5 and $10 level. We're seeing some significant changes there. And as we mentioned earlier, Discord. Discord is the new Slack for us. A lot of cool benefits there. And one of those is that we have a public lobby, which is really neat. So you don't need to be a Patreon donor, although we would certainly appreciate that you do. But anyone from the public can go into Discord, create an account. You can do that very easily, randomchatter.com/Discord. You create an account, and that public lobby is kind of where really all of our general discussions are taking place, with a lot of hosts and a lot of other listeners. But what you're not getting is a lot of the other channels within Discord, where we're having some very specific and targeted discussions on certain shows and certain topics. So just that $1 a month in Patreon gets you access and really opens up Discord. You get access to a ton of great stuff in there. So please consider joining us, and we greatly appreciate your contributions.
All right, the music you hear in this episode is the Imperial March by Cell Dweller and the Force theme by Scandroid.
Okay, that brings us to the end of another episode. Thanks for listening. We'll come back at you in about a week.